Okay. So let's talk about the precious human life. The point of meditating on it is now so that we make use of it, and specifically here in the verse, so that we give up the clinging to this life. It's one of the meditations that helps us give up clinging to this life. It's an antidote to depression. Okay? And a precious human life is not the same as a human life in a Buddhist sense. Okay, everybody who's a human being does not necessarily have a precious human life. The reason being that a precious human life has the eight freedoms and the 10 fortunes, and what all of this points to is that a precious human life gives us the opportunity to practice the Dharma. Okay, so that's the distinctive feature between just a human life and a precious human life. Okay, there's 5 billion and how many human beings on the planet, but not all of them have precious human lives, because to have a precious human life, you need, you know, the 8 freedoms and the 10 fortunes, which means you need all the conducive circumstances for practicing the Dharma. Okay, so when we consider that, of all the human beings, you know, having a special human life is something particular, then it makes us really think, well, what is that about, and what's the value and purpose of our life? Okay? Because for ordinary beings with ordinary human lives, what do they think the value and purpose of their life is? Now, make money, be famous, have a family, right? Yeah? This kind of thing. Have pleasure, go on vacation to Hawaii. That's the purpose of life. For somebody with a precious human life, that's not the purpose of life. Okay? Purpose of life is something higher. And that's where we talked about the purpose of a precious human life. Remember last time that it had three chief purposes? One is we can use our precious human life to prepare to die peacefully and to attain a good rebirth. Okay? And second, that we can use a precious human life for the ultimate purposes of attaining either liberation or enlightenment. And third, that we can use our precious human life moment by moment by practicing the thought training. And through this, what happens is every single thing we do, every single thought we have, every single action we take, we're transforming it into the path to enlightenment through the thought training practice. So there we talked about things like when you're washing the dishes, to think I'm washing the defilements of sentient beings with the washcloth of wisdom, realizing emptiness. Okay? Or when we go down steps, to think I'm willing to go into the suffering realms to benefit sentient beings. When we go up steps, to think I'm going into leading all sentient beings to enlightenment. Okay? So practicing in every moment. And this relates too to what we were talking about on Sunday, when we see beautiful things, you know, practice with the beautiful things. Offer the beautiful things to sentient beings. Offer the beautiful things that we see in nature around us to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Okay? So the whole purpose of that is through everything we do, everything we encounter, use it as an opportunity to train our mind, to purify our mind, to create good karma. Okay? So those are the three purposes of a precious human life. And a precious human life is one in which we have all the availability to, you know, and conducive circumstances to practice. And if any one of the 8 freedoms and 10 fortunes are missing, it can be very difficult to practice the Dharma. For example, many years ago I was invited to Denmark to teach. And the lady who invited me worked at a home for handicapped children, in particular retarded children. And I wanted to go visit the children and see them and play with them. And she took me, and so we came in, and it was a state institution. We opened the door. There's all these bright colored things all around, all these balls and, you know, and all sorts of toys. Incredible, you know. I mean, a child's heaven of toys and playthings. And I look around at all of this, and then I start hearing these moans and groans and these very odd noises and, you know, you know, and I'm wondering what in the world's going on here. And then finally I begin to notice among this whole heaven of child's playthings are the children, you know, dressed in beautiful, colorful clothes, but their minds completely out of it, you know. Some of them are lying on, they had these little like planks on four wheels, and they're lying stomach down on those, moving around. Or one little girl was lying in a bed full of ping pong balls because she couldn't roll over, you know, and if she lied flat on a mattress, she would get bed sores. And, I mean, it was just, the kids did not have the state of freedom where they had all their sense faculties intact, you know? So here they were, born in a very wealthy country with so much wealth around them, with teachers and people who cared about them in a country where there were the Buddhist teachings, but because they didn't have the mental faculties, all the rest of the good karma that they had that led to the good circumstances in their life was wasted because they couldn't practice. Yeah? Remember I told you last time about, you know, when Alex went to Czechoslovakia and they had to hide in the bedroom for the teachings and make it look like they were playing cards in case the police came. This was under the communist regime. Or you see, like, even in Bodh Gaya, where is, you know, the holiest place on earth where the Buddha attained enlightenment, for many people who live there, you know, they have no faith in Buddhism. They don't have the attribute of having faith and interest in spiritual matters. And for them, Bodh Gaya is simply a place to open a business and make money. Yeah? So they buy all these Buddhist relics and things like that, and statues and prayer beads and things. And for them, all these things don't have any, you know, value in terms of spiritual practice, liberation, enlightenment. For these people, all these holy objects are just something that you use to make money. Yeah? And there they are at the Bodh Gaya stupa, where it's very powerful to meditate. They don't want to go to the stupa. They want to stay on the street and sell their wares. So they're missing, you know, that attribute of having interest in spiritual matters and you know, wanting to practice. Okay? So when we think about everything that it takes in order to have a precious human life, we see it's not easy.
Would you say everybody has the potential to have that? Or do somebody, well, obviously not everybody is at that place, but do they have the potential of this human life, or do they...
Okay. Well, some people, they may start out with, they don't have a precious human life, but later on they get the good circumstances. Whereas others, I mean, like when I was born, I don't think I had a precious human life. First of all, I didn't live in a central country, a country that had the Sangha. Yeah? No, so I don't think when I was born there was much of a Sangha in America. And I didn't have spiritual interest when I was young, you know, no way. I didn't have a Dharma teacher at that time, so I didn't have that attribute either. I went through a period where I was filled with wrong views, so I had that hindrance of having many, many wrong views. Okay, so it was only kind of later that some good karma ripened and, you know, these kind of factors came into place.
So is that how you would describe why some people would turn to these teachings and others would?
Well, I think, you know, like why do some people turn to teachings and why some not? I think it has to do with our previous karma, you know? And that karma doesn't necessarily ripen at the same moment we're born. It may take a while to ripen. But it depends on what we've done in our previous lives. I mean, meeting the Dharma isn't something that happens by accident. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that has causes.
That should be recognized, I would assume?
Yes, actually, you're leading me into the next point of the outline, okay?
Yeah.
So let me talk about that. Because on the outline of Precious Human Life, it was first how to recognize it, which we talked about last time, and then second, the purposes, which are those three that I just mentioned. And then the third outline was the difficulty and rarity of attaining a precious human life. Okay, so that's what your questions were leading into. So let's talk about that, the difficulty and rarity of attaining a precious human life. And the purpose of thinking about this is so that we value our precious human life and really use it instead of being complacent, thinking, well, I'll just have a good time now and I'll have another precious human life later, so it doesn't really matter if I practice now or not. Because when we start thinking of how rare and difficult it is to get a precious human life, we see that, you know, really how fortunate we are. Okay, so under the rarity and difficulty, there's another three outlines, okay? There's, you know, it's rare and difficult, first, because it's hard to create the cause. Second, you know, by number, we can see the rarity and difficulty of getting a precious human life. And third, by analogy, we can see the rarity and difficulty. Okay, so let's go back to that first one. In terms of creating the cause, that it's hard to create the cause for precious human life. Okay, what are the causes? There's three causes. As you can see, Tibetan Buddhism love outlines with numbers, but it's actually very useful for meditation if you can remember these, because then you know exactly how to meditate and think of the topics. Anyway, there's three causes for precious human life. One is ethical discipline. Second is the six far-reaching attitudes, and third is aspiration and dedications. Okay, so let's look at the first one, you know, ethical discipline. So ethical discipline is what gets us to a human life. Okay, because when they talk about the different realms of existence, a human life, as let's say compared to an animal life, is considered a fortunate rebirth. An animal life is considered an unfortunate one. Okay, so, you know, last time we were talking about trying to teach the dog and the cats how to practice Dharma, you know, a little bit difficult. So from that point of view, we say they have an unfortunate life. And we have a fortunate one. But just to get a human body with human intelligence requires ethical discipline. Okay, now let's look, is it easy or difficult to maintain ethical discipline? Okay, let's, first of all, let's look at people who don't have vows. Yeah, how many people actually keep good ethical discipline? Yeah, what do we read about in the newspaper all the time? Killing, stealing, as well as sexual behavior, lying, intoxicants. It's what fills the newspaper, doesn't it? Yeah. The opposite to the five precepts is what fills the newspaper. So there's a lot of that stuff going on. And even you look at people who are famous in our society, top government leaders, who are supposed to be, you know, the people that we look up to, and they're involved with all five of these, aren't they? I mean, the president commands the military to go out and kill. You know, several of our presidents have been involved in stealing things, in lying, in osmotic sexual behavior, in intoxicants. You know, it's all right there. And these are our leaders who are supposed to be the intelligent, respectable people in society. Okay. Now, what about the people who aren't supposed to be the intelligent, respectable ones? You know, Joe Blow and, you know, everybody else. How many people do we know who have never killed? Okay, well, maybe people haven't killed a human being, but how about never killed any animals or insects? Yeah, have any of us never killed any animals or insects? Difficult. How about stealing? Any of us here who's never stole? Yeah. Didn't you steal? I mean, we steal, don't we? Yeah, we use things for our work, for our personal use, without asking. I'm not talking about breaking into people's houses, that kind of stealing. But we avoid paying tickets that we don't have to pay. We avoid paying fines. You know, if we can get into the movie theater free, we do. Now, when we were teenagers, we probably took stuff from stores. And we did all sorts of stuff. Make long-distance calls on somebody else's call, you know, credit card, or, you know, who knows what. So there's all sorts of ways in which we steal. What about lying? Any of us who have never lied? Again, I mean, we've all lied, haven't we? Big lies, little lies, medium-sized lies. It's very easy. We distort the truth for our own benefit. Lying very easily, okay? Unwise sexual behavior, that's rampant in our society also, okay? So we just look around. And what about harsh words, okay? How many people do you know who have never spoken harsh words to somebody else? We all have, okay? Anybody you know who's never used their speech in a divisive way to cause disharmony? We've all done that. Gossip behind other people's backs to sow disharmony. Now, you know anybody who's never gossiped? I mean, you look at the list of the 10 destructive actions, and most of us have done all 10. Have we purified them? Well, you know, if you look, even we as Dharma practitioners, how strong is our purification? The end of the day, we're tired. We don't really want to purify. We figure we'll do it mañana. Okay. So when we create negative actions, we do it very perfectly. We have a strong motivation. We carry it out without botching it up. We rejoice at the end of our negative actions. You know, so we create strong negative actions, but then we don't purify them. No. On the other hand, our virtuous actions, do we really spend time creating a good motivation and carrying them out well and rejoicing about them at the end? Or are virtuous actions something we just kind of do here and there without paying attention to it? You know, when we start really examining the karma we've created, you become, or at least I become, quite apprehensive because I you know, when I'm just kind of going about in my la-la state, it seems like, oh, okay, I'm a nun, everything's great, I'm creating lots of good karma. But if I really look at how I'm behaving, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I'm not doing properly. And, you know, I'm somebody who has vows. And when you have vows, whether you have the 5 lay precepts or monastic vows, that gives you the opportunity to create a lot of good karma. So let alone me who messes up, you know, the people who don't have vows are really going to mess up because they don't have the vows to act as a protection. So, you know, when we start looking around, it's really, you know, in this world, comparing the amount of positive karma created to the amount of negative karma created, we see that it's not hard just to get a human life, just to create the ethical discipline needed to get a human life. Because ethical discipline involves deliberately restraining ourselves from negative actions. Yeah. So we have to have the intention to not do a negative action in order to create ethical discipline. It's not just the state of sitting there and not doing it. Okay. So for example, if there's 2 people sitting here in the room and one person has the vow not to kill, and the other person doesn't have the vow, the person with the vow not to kill has that intention not to kill because they took that vow and that intention is still present in their mind. So they're sitting here not killing and they're accumulating good karma. But the person who doesn't have that precept to not kill, they're sitting here and not, you know, and not killing, but they're not creating good karma by that because they don't have the intention not to kill at that very moment. Okay? So just, you see that to create good karma, it's actually not just a question of sitting there. You have to be actively doing something. So that's why we take precepts, because it enables us to, you know, create a lot of good karma. You know, because every moment we're not breaking them, we're keeping them. But then we ask ourselves, how many people in the world have taken precepts and are keeping them? And then we see not so many. So, you know, there's a lot of people who could be creating good karma but aren't, because they haven't worked with their mind to generate those intentions to abandon the negative actions. And then even those of us with precepts, we break the precepts. And so we create negative actions by breaking the precepts. So if we, you know, if we look around in that kind of way, we see that creating the cause just to get an upper rebirth is, it's not a cinch. It's not something we should take for granted. It really takes some effort and awareness on our part. So this should make us, like I said, a little bit, not a little bit, a lot apprehensive. Yeah. Because it challenges the kind of complacent mind that we have that just says, well, yeah, samsara is kind of nice and everything's going well and I don't need to worry about anything. Because in actual fact, you know, when we begin to understand karma and what creates the cause of happiness and what creates the cause of suffering, we'll see that, you know, very easy to create the cause of suffering because ignorance, anger, and attachment rise so readily in our mind, and very difficult to create the cause of happiness because it takes, you know, like I was saying, an intention, a deliberate intention to abandon those negative actions. Okay? Or creating the cause of happiness takes deliberate motivation to do a positive action. And then we have to ask ourselves, you know, what am I doing all day? Okay? And that's that question I put to you last week. Yeah, what do we think about most of the day? What's our mind on most of the day? What's our motivation most of the day? Yeah? Who are we thinking about from the moment we wake up? All sentient beings or ourselves? Me. Yeah, we think about me all the time, don't we? And specifically, we're thinking about my pleasure and my happiness. Okay? So, you know, when our minds are totally enveloped with the eight worldly concerns, we have quite negative motivations in our mind and we create a ton of negative karma. Okay? So this is something we need to be aware of. And the more we become aware of it, the more we... It seems like almost a miracle that we got a precious human life to start with, that we got the opportunity that we have, because we see it's very, very difficult. Remember I was telling you that the Tibetans often say that the animals around a monastery were monks or nuns who didn't keep their vows well? So you can kind of see, you know, they have some imprint and attraction to the Dharma, but they didn't keep the vows well, so they have a lower rebirth without the possibility to practice. But that attraction to the Dharma is there, and Naga's probably sitting outdoors, you know, wanting to come in like he usually is. Yeah. Put some good imprints on his mind listening to the teachings. Yeah. So we can see how hard it is. I mean, look, we're having teachings right now. How many people are able to come and listen to teachings, and how many people in the state of Missouri aren't able to come and listen to teachings? Okay. So we can see it's, you know, it's really rare to have a life in which we can practice. Okay, so we looked at the first cause, you know, ethical discipline, that one's not so easy to attain, to get. And that's the one that just gets us the human life. It doesn't even get us the precious human life. Okay, ethical discipline just gets us out of the lower rebirths. The other thing that gets us the precious human life are doing the six far-reaching attitudes. You know, generosity, patience, joyous effort, concentration, wisdom. So particularly like generosity. Generosity, by being generous, it creates the cause for wealth. When we have wealth, then we have, you know, in the precious human life, we have the one of, the tenth one of having kind people who assist us on the path. So, you know, we have benefactor, we have enough material wherewithal to practice. So, again, is it easy to create generosity? Well, you know, superficially we might think, well, I'm a very generous person. You know, I give people birthday presents, I give people Christmas presents. But, you know, when we give a present like that, are we really doing so with the motivation to have a precious human life and to attain enlightenment? Or is our underlying motivation to make somebody happy so that they'll like us or to fulfill an obligation? So even when we're giving a gift, you know, is our motivation really something pure? Is it a Dharma motivation, or are we still, you know, giving a gift in order to get something, some worldly, you know, perk ourselves? You know, like to have people like us, to get some brownie points on other people's lists. And then how many times do we have the opportunity to be generous, but then we aren't generous? Yeah, the opportunity is right there to give or to make an offering, but we don't do it. And I mean, I have all my stories about this, which I'm sure you'll hear in time. That, for example, when I used to walk to the bazaar in Dharamsala, and there were the lepers on the side of the road, and I had very little money when I lived there, but you know, I didn't want to give the lepers enough money for a cup of tea because I was so afraid if I gave them, you know, 25 pesa, which is like, you know, one penny or something. In India, you know, that becomes a lot of money in those days. You know, I thought, oh, if I give it to them, then I won't have it. So here it was, you know, the perfect opportunity to be generous to people who needed it. Not, you know, and I couldn't bring myself to separate from it because of fear for myself. So lots of things like this where it's very difficult to really be generous with a good motivation, you know, that's purely for others' benefit or purely, you know, with the aspiration for liberation or enlightenment. Okay? So when we start to look, you know, being generous is difficult. Being patient is difficult, isn't it? Yeah? How many times do we get angry? You know, we have the opportunity to be patient, but again, you know, we often blow it and lose our temper, and there it goes. Yeah? Joyous effort, difficult. It's, you know, it's so much easier to lie in bed and put things off and, you know, not really do our Dharma practice with joy but have a lot of excuses. You know, so when we look at things like this, we see difficult to create the cause, you know, to have a precious human life. And then the third quality is aspiration and dedication prayers. So we might you know, keep ethical discipline, and we might be generous or patient or whatever, but then what do we pray for? You know, may my virtue ripen in, and then what do we usually pray for? You know, can I be famous? Can I be wealthy? Can everything good happen to me? Can my business be successful? Can my family life be wonderful? You know, how often do we really pray and dedicate so that the virtue that we've created through ethical discipline, through the six far-reaching attitudes, actually leads to another precious human life, or leads to liberation and enlightenment. And this is the reason why we say dedication prayers at the end of teachings and at the end of our meditation sessions. You know, and if we don't say them out loud, then we should at least say them ourselves, you know, have these verses memorized and dedicate the positive potential. Because when we do a Dharma discussion or attend teachings or do meditation, we create a lot of virtue. But if we don't dedicate it, then It gets destroyed when we next get angry or generate wrong views. Okay, so we might create a lot of virtue, but if we don't dedicate it, then we destroy it because our anger comes up or our wrong views comes up. Okay? So this topic is, it's a little bit alarming, okay? And it's meant to be alarming because it's meant to shake us up for two purposes. One is so that we really appreciate our present opportunity in our precious human life and don't waste it. And two, so that we don't take it for granted that we'll get another precious human life in the future, and so that we will really practice well in this lifetime and take advantage of our precious human life so that we will get another one in the future to be able to continue to practice. Okay? So we if you're feeling a little bit anxious now, it could be a wisdom kind of anxiety that wakes us up out of the sleep of our ignorance that gets us to look at the karma we're creating and look at the quality of our Dharma practice. And I know for myself, whenever I hear these teachings, I do get shaken up in it. And it's a good kind of shaken up because it makes me work harder and create the cause of happiness. Okay? So that first thing of how it's rare and difficult to get a precious human life, you know, because it's difficult to create the cause, we can see that's true. Okay? And then it's difficult by number, So here what we do is we compare the number of people who have precious human lives with the number of people who have other kind of rebirths. So just if we compare, of all the human beings, how many have precious human lives and how many don't, we realize that, you know, the number of people with precious human lives who have the opportunity to practice Dharma is very small compared to the total number of human beings on this planet. And the total number of human beings is very small compared to the number of animals and insects. I mean, even look where we live now, 60 acres of land, yeah? There's, what, 7 human beings here? How many animals and insects? Yeah. Think of how many termites crawled out of the walls in the recent weeks. Thousands! You know, maybe hundreds of thousands of termites. That's just the termites. You know, what about the fleas and the ticks and the ants? How many ants are there? There's tons of those, okay? And spiders, and cockroaches, and beetles. And we found a snail in the kitchen this morning. You know, how many snails are around? You know? So even on this piece of land, the number of human beings compared to the number of animals and insects, you know, there's no comparison there. So if we think in the whole planet, you know, including like all the fish under sea, you know, under the waters. And no, it's the number of human beings is very small. And of human beings, the number of who have precious human lives is even smaller yet. Okay, so we can see with the second criteria that having a precious human life is, you know, by in terms of number, very difficult. You know, not very many people have it. It's really rare. And then the third way to meditate on this is by analogy, you know. And here they tell a little story that it's like a turtle, okay. Imagine this, there's a huge vast ocean. Yeah. There's a turtle who's blind. And the turtle is at the bottom of the ocean. And once every 100 years he comes up for a breath of air. Meanwhile, on the top of the ocean, there's a golden yolk. And the golden yolk is floating all around because the currents push it here and there, you know, on top of this huge ocean. And this turtle comes up for air once every 100 years. What's the likelihood of the turtle coming up and putting its head through the golden yolk? Not very high, you know, because he comes up once, you know, he comes up here and the yolk's over here and he comes up here and the yolk's over there. Sometimes he comes up and just hits the edge of the yolk but can't get his head through. You know, it's like so difficult. So even by analogy we see. So what that analogy is, We're like the blind turtle, okay? We're blind in the sense that we're blinded by ignorance. We're in the bottom of the ocean, meaning that usually in an unfortunate rebirth, we come up to the surface, meaning to, you know, an upper realm once every 100 years. But how many times when come up to the surface do we actually put our head through the golden yoke, which is the precious human life? Not very often. Okay. So when you really, you know, in your meditation, if you really, you know, sit and do this visualization and think about this turtle and imagine, you know, turtle here and the yoke there and the turtle there and the yoke here and think about it, you realize, wow, you know, I am so incredibly, unbelievably fortunate, you know, to have the life that I have. And so, you know, this meditation, what it does is it makes us feel so fortunate for having a precious human life and wanting so much to be able to practice to create the cause for another precious human life and to create the cause for liberation and enlightenment. Okay? And then when we have that as motivations, you know, that we want another precious human life, we want liberation and enlightenment, when that's like a foremost important thing in our mind, then attraction to the happiness of this life is not so interesting. You know, it's like that stuff just isn't very meaningful. It doesn't really bring real happiness. It doesn't cut it. It's not the purpose of my life. And so you can see that when we really meditate on these things deeply, our interest in the eight worldly dharmas, the eight worldly concerns, gets drastically reduced because we really see that there's a much higher purpose and benefit to our life than the eight worldly concerns. And instead, our hearts and life like feel very open and very excited and very enthusiastic because we see what the potential of our life is and what we can do. Okay? So that's about precious human life. There's a little bit of time for questions and comments. Yeah?
So why shouldn't we all aim for rebirth in a pure land?
Why shouldn't we all aim for rebirth in a pure land?
I mean, I know that pure lands are still part of samsara and they have to be like the ultimate goal of enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, but if there are practices which supposedly can do this for you,
Right. Okay. Many people choose to go for rebirth in a pure land rather than a precious human life because once you're born in a pure land, you can't fall back into the lower realms again. You know, once you're born in a pure land, you can't be born in the lower realms. But they say that the bodhisattvas who are born in pure lands are actually praying to be reborn in a precious human life because when you have a precious human life, you can practice the Vajrayana, which can produce enlightenment in this very lifetime. Okay? So when you're born in a pure land, it can take a while to attain full enlightenment. Okay? Because you have to do the whole Sutrayana path. Yeah, the path of Paramitayana, the perfection path. So that takes much longer in terms of accumulating the good karma for enlightenment and so on. Whereas, you know, there's special techniques within Vajrayana for accumulating a lot of good karma very quickly. And, you know, so many of these beings who have great compassion and because of the power of their compassion want to get enlightened quickly would prefer to have a precious human life where they can practice Vajrayana. But if we're not so sure about our ability to keep good karma, then it's probably good that we pray for rebirth in a pure land, you know? Yeah. Other questions, comments? Okay, so let's just review how you meditate on this. Again, this is what we call analytic or checking meditation, So here we're thinking about the different points one by one. We're not focusing on the breath in this kind of meditation. Instead, we have the points and we have an outline with the different points, and we go through them one by one and think about them, and then come, you know, try and transform our mind to become the conclusion that was explained. So in terms of the meditation just on recognizing our precious human life, we would go through, you know, first the 8 freedoms, then the 10 fortunes. And with the 8 freedoms, think, you know, what would happen if I didn't have this freedom? Could I practice? What would happen if I didn't have the second freedom? Could I practice? You know, in terms of the 10 fortunes, say, wow, I have this fortune. Wow, how lucky I am. Second one, wow, I have this. How lucky I am. And at the end of that, you know, come to the conclusion of, I have a precious human life. How fortunate I am. I really want to practice. Okay? So you go through, and you don't just think of the points, oh, yeah, I have that one, yeah, I have that one. But really think, like, well, what would it be like if I didn't have it? And how many people don't have that fortune? Okay? And then we really come out feeling very, very happy, with a great deal of enthusiasm for our practice. Then, with the second meditation that has to do with precious human life, the one on the purpose of the precious human life, there's the 3 points. You know, the temporal purpose, getting an upper rebirth, the ultimate purpose, liberation and enlightenment, and third, making our life meaningful moment by moment. And there what we do is we go through and we think of each of those 3 purposes. And we go, wow, I have the opportunity, you know, for example, to really prepare for a future life. That means that when I die, I don't have to worry. You know, and if I prepare for a precious human life, I'm going to actually be living more in the moment in this lifetime, because I'm not going to be, you know, so wrapped up with attachment and anger and the 8 worldly concerns that, you know, impinge on my happiness in this lifetime and that distract me from living in the moment. So actually, as I, you know, I explained this in one of the Sunday talks, how, you know, taking care for a future life actually helps us live in the moment more, because it frees us from the attachment and anger that prevent us from living in the moment. Okay? So, you know, when we meditate, wow, I have that potential to prepare for, you know, to get another precious human life. And then, wow, you know, I have the potential to attain liberation and enlightenment. And, you know, not many people on this planet have that potential. And we start thinking, even of our family members, you know, do our family members even want liberation and enlightenment? You know, they probably don't. Yeah? And how fortunate, you know, will we have this ultimate purpose? And, you know, it's so meaningful, and, you know, put an end to all the suffering and get out of cyclic existence and be able to manifest in infinite forms to benefit sentient beings. Wow, what an incredible opportunity I have with this life. You know, how meaningful my life can be. My life isn't just about making money and raising kids and being famous. There's some deeper meaning over the long term that has to do with, you know, developing good qualities in my mind and purifying my heart. And, you know, I really want to make my life purposeful, meaningful in that way. So again, you know, from that meditation, you conclude, you know, my life has great meaning and I want to really make it meaningful. Okay, so you draw that conclusion from meditating on those 3 points. And then the third outline, the rarity and difficulty of getting a precious human life, then we think about it in terms of the difficulty of creating the cause, and the difficulty in terms of the number, you know, how many human precious human lives versus animals, you know, so on. Then we do the analogy with the turtle coming up, putting its head through the golden yolk, and, you know, we meditate and visualize that, think about it. Now, especially think, you know, is it easy to create good karma? Is it easy to create, you know, ethical discipline? And just check, you know, really do some examination. And from that, we come to the conclusion, no, it's actually very difficult to get a precious human life. So again, how fortunate I am, you know, unbelievably fortunate. And I really want to make use of my life. I don't want to waste it, you know. If I just make use of my life for the eight worldly concerns, the next life I'll find myself in a lower realm, and let alone help other sentient beings, I won't even be able to help myself. And how will I ever, you know, get out of a lower realm once I'm born there? Do I want to be reborn as, you know, Naga's friend, you know, or a challenging, you know, as the friend of the cats, you know? Is that what I want, to be reborn as, you know, or a termite in the monastery? I think you, you know, karmic cause to be reborn as a termite. You're so close to the Dharma, but your mind's so far away. And they know, I don't want to be reborn as that, like that. You know, my life has a higher meaning and purpose, and I'm so unbelievably fortunate that I don't want to waste any time. You know, I really want to make sure that I use my time wisely. You know, that I use my time for practicing, for transforming my mind. That I don't waste my time worrying about things that aren't worth worrying about, and being afraid of things, and, you know, craving and clinging to things. And I don't want to waste my time just criticizing.